This is your tech news briefing for Monday, March 30th. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. The U.S. has now surpassed China for the highest number of known coronavirus cases. One way that China and other countries tried to control the coronavirus outbreak was using technology to have more exact contact tracing, figuring out where people had been and who they might have been in contact with using technology. That has drawn a lot of criticism from privacy advocates, but it also helped those countries start to get back to normal. Now, researchers at MIT are trying to figure out a way to replicate the approach in the U.S. without giving up too many privacy controls. Our reporter Doug Belkin will join us to tell us all about it. But first, new week, new work-from-home tech challenges. Our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern is back by popular demand and also our demand, and also because she likes us, to help us problem solve all of our work-from-home tech problems. Joanna, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. I think it is demand from me. I demand being here.
I see. Well, that's good. Everyone's in agreement then. Okay, it is Monday. What did you do over the weekend?
Well, it was raining this weekend, so I decided to basically spend the entire weekend inside with my old gadgets.
That sounds like fun, kind of.
So last week, I decided that I was buying too much stuff. That we are home, we're trying to buy stuff that we think will solve problems. Some of us have problems that we have to buy stuff for, right? A new laptop, because our old laptop just completely doesn't work for work. Maybe we need to buy that dongle. Maybe we need to buy that extra cord. But it got me thinking about, what about all the stuff I currently have in my house? And I want to admit here publicly that I do not believe in Marie Kondo. And I think that even these things, all these old tech toys or gadgets that I have that may not bring me major joy, could still be important one day. So if you're one of those people, I ask you to join me in taking out that old tech. And you can do this next weekend. You can do it today. Monday is always a great day for old things. And take out your old stuff and follow along in my column where I talk about how you can revive an old laptop, an old tablet, or an old smartphone, and even an old monitor or TV.
That is amazing. I will tell you that I have one of the first MacBook laptops, and it is no longer alive. But I do have the cord for it, and I still have it.
Okay, I'm not sure that one I can fix. But, I mean, here's the really promising stuff that I found of mine that I was able to bring back to life. So a 2009 ThinkPad that's over 10 years old, that was first shipped with Microsoft Vista, which we all don't really want to remember, I was able to convert into a Chromebook. It's not technically a Chromebook, but it's running a version of Chromium, which is very much like Chrome OS, like what you get on a Chromebook. And it works incredibly well. I was lucky this laptop still has a working Wi-Fi card. I still had the charger. So all those things, you may run into issues with what you have at home. But I used this software called Neverware. It's called Neverware Cloud Ready. And you download this. It's a little bit intricate of a process, but you have to download some software. You have to get a USB drive. I would say that you need to be sort of like you don't have to be a tech expert, but you definitely can't just, you know, can't be someone that's like, I don't like tech. I can't do that. Somewhere in the middle there. I really think anyone can really do this if you put your mind to it. And you install this on your old laptop and it's a Chrome browser. And so it works really fast. Even if you like this laptop was super slow, like could barely boot up Windows, but you completely wipe the old operating system and you put on this new Chrome-based operating system. And it's great. And I actually wrote half my column on it.
That is awesome. I mean, that is like literally a DIY life hack of the sort of, what do you do with your old jelly jars and you turn them into planters for your grandma or something like that. I mean, that is, but on a tech level, I love it.
Yeah. And okay, so that's like the most advanced one I give in the column. But in the video that I did for this week and also in this column, I did one on tablets or old smartphones. And one of the best things I think you can do with those is turn it into a dedicated video chatting device or video chatting box, because then you don't have to constantly be trying to like find a stand to put that tablet on or your phone on. And a lot of these old iOS or even Android devices run the apps for video chatting, Zoom, Google Hangouts, FaceTime, obviously, if you've got an old iPhone or old iPad. And in my column, I give you a lot of fun examples of how to make a stand for these devices, and you can use everything from a cardboard box to a wire hanger to an egg carton to Legos.
You previewed this already. You kind of teased this in one of our former episodes. This might be a great also project for kids. If your kids are asking you for devices and you can repurpose something old of yours and they can still be happy with it, is that a possibility?
Yeah.
And if it breaks, then who cares? Because it's old anyway.
It's probably already broken. Like, that's what one of my pieces of advice is, that, like, if it's too cracked and it's too shattered, don't use it. But if it's, like, slightly cracked and there's just, like, that, you know, hairline at the top of the screen, it's probably still fine to use.
Great. I think that's a great tip. So we've been also getting some tech tips from our audience members. And I know, especially this Monday, especially if people have been working from home for a couple of weeks, I know, you know, in the beginning when something's new, it's very easy to kind of like hunker down and you're into this new situation. After a couple of weeks, it starts to kind of wear. And I'm noticing like attention spans are starting to fade and you're, you know, so what do we have for people going into what could be for them week two or week three of this working from home scenario? Do we have anything good for them, good advice for them?
We have some, I would say this is great advice, but also humorous advice, which I think we all need on this Monday. So here's some advice from Eric Senecum, who's a full-time student at Arizona State University. And I just don't even want to tease this anymore. It's just so good.
I have a ton of things that can distract me at my house, from my phone to my computer, my laptop, to drinking beer, to being distracted by my two dogs. So one of the few things that I do to tune myself from all my distractions is that I wear what I like to call my dad hat, and it narrows my vision so that I can see what's on my computer monitor, as well as whatever paper I'm working on for school. And I don't always do this, but I try to silence my phone and everything else to minimize all distractions. And I also wear a pair of Sony over-the-ear headphones that have active noise canceling. And this really tunes everything out for me.
Did he call that a dad hat?
I think so. I'm now looking up, because I'm picturing, when I think of like a dad hat, I'm thinking like a safari hat, not like a baseball cap. Like, I'm talking about like a hat with flaps on the side. I don't know what you would call one of those. But like that would take around, like it'd be on the side of your face, so you would stop that peripheral vision. I'm going to do this. I'm ordering one.
It's a great, yeah, it's a great suggestion. All right. So we are taking more questions and tips. If you want to send your questions or ideas to us, to Joanna or to me, to our team, either write to Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com or leave us a voicemail on our work from home hotline. That's 314-635-0388. And we will put that number in our show description. All right, up next, researchers at MIT are trying to get people to opt in to an app that would collect your location data to try and stop the spread of the coronavirus. Our reporter, Doug Belkin, will tell us all about it. That's coming up after the break. So we've reported on some of the surveillance technologies that governments have used to track the spread of the coronavirus. China, South Korea, Singapore, they use technology to do something called contact tracing, where you try and figure out who's come into contact with infected people. Now, researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology are working on what could be the first application of contact tracing here in the U.S. Here to tell us more about what they're working on and some of the challenges they face is our reporter, Doug Belkin. Doug, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's just back up a little bit and get a sense of the status quo in the U.S. What is the current approach here to tracking the spread of the coronavirus?
Right, so it's very analog and slow and inefficient. So what happens now is if you get... you come down with a disease and the public health officials know about it, then they'll do an interview with you and they'll ask you, where were you for the past 5-10 days? Were you at any parties? Did you take a taxi ride? Were you on the subway? And they will try to reach out to all the people that you may have come in contact with. Then they'll phone those people and they'll tell them, you know, you've come in contact with somebody who has come down with corona and you should get tested or self-quarantine, but it's an issue. And it's slow and it's inefficient. So it doesn't work that well.
Well, and especially because we know that a lot of people haven't gotten tested or only got tested after they were showing really extreme symptoms of the virus, right? So even trying to figure out who all has it at that point seems to be very difficult.
Right. I mean, without the tests, it's difficult to figure out how far and why this has spread and who has it because we just can't test for it right now.
So MIT is working on a solution right now. Can you just tell us a little bit about it? What is it and how does it work? How could it help?
So the idea is instead of reaching out through the telephone to try to get in touch with everybody who you may have come in contact with, to try to leverage the information that we carry around with on our phones. Our phones collect GPS information and they tell where we've been over the past several days. And weeks even. So if you tap into that information, you can lay a trail and see where people have come. And then you can overlay where other people have crossed over with those. And that will tell you the contacts that that those people have made.
How is this different or the same, I guess, from what China was using to track people down and let them know that they might have come in contact with someone with coronavirus?
So in China, what the government controlled the information. If you went and took your phone into the public health system, and they would track where you have been or where you're going now, and that information would go to the government. So the government would know where you were, which is very efficient, but it is a problem if you're worried about civil liberties and privacy. So that solution doesn't work well in the United States or in the West.
So how is MIT trying to mitigate that problem, that privacy issue?
So they've come up with a solution where they've created essentially a third party. The information is anonymized. From your phone, it gets reported back to a third party and it's anonymized and scrubbed. And so the idea is then it's not reported to the government from where you are. It's just a trail. Who has been infected with corona, and they can view that, but they don't know who it is, and it doesn't go directly to the government. So that bridge is supposed to make people feel a little bit more trusting.
Yeah, I mean that was supposed to be happening in China as well, but then the information about those individuals got leaked to the public. How are they trying to prevent that from happening?
Their idea is that the information that you give is your information and you can control it and you can edit it. So for instance, say I've come down with corona and I tell the public health official who wants me to download this information into this app. But I'm concerned that I go in and out of my house all the time. And even though the information is anonymized, I don't want it known where I live. Or maybe I went out to dinner with somebody and I don't want it known that I met somebody at a restaurant or whatnot. So you can edit that information before you download it, which is supposed to make folks feel a little bit better. But ultimately, this is based on trust. People are going to have to be willing to download their private and personal information and trust that it won't be abused. And there's no real way around that.
Los Angeles actually gave up on contact tracing recently. Basically, they just trying to rein it in by social distancing and other measures. Some are saying that right now it's basically too late to try to apply something like this in New York, for example, which is the epicenter of the outbreak here in the U.S. right now. What kind of circumstances do you need for something like contact tracing to work? And where could this MIT solution still be applied as we see this coronavirus growing and spreading in other places?
So in places where the virus is spread all over the place, it's just too late to use it. And it's harder to do this in very dense places because people come in contact with each other all the time. It's going to have more effect in a place where the virus hasn't taken hold and the population isn't quite as dense. So those are two of the things that help this move along. It's probably... New York and L.A., it's probably just too late to bother with it.
So what stage are we at now with us? Is this something that states in the Midwest, for example, could expect to see pop up and be utilized by their health departments?
Yeah. So what's happened is the folks at MIT have partnered with the folks at the Mayo Clinic, and they've been working with the federal government, and they've been working with the World Health Organization, so sort of different levels to try to get their buy-in. And they've also been working with Ernst & Young, EY, to try to get them to push this stuff out, because it doesn't work unless a lot of people use it. It's the wisdom of the crowds, and if it's not crowdsourced by a lot of people, then it just won't have the impact that it could.
It's like herd immunity.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
All right. So, reporter Doug Belkin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Don't forget to share your work-from-home tech tips and headaches with us. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be sharing her favorite tips and answering your questions, giving us solutions every day right here, as long as we are still all right here. You can leave us a voice message at the number in the description in your podcast app, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. And that was your Tech News Briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.